Okay, so this is the third in the series, so we have to sort of wrap up. I'm not sure how we're going to do that exactly, but I want to. I always like to tell you one story about the what we call the Jewish ethicists. You know, the rabbis that we learn from, and how they're such incredible human beings and have devoted their whole life to growth and integrate the values of the Torah into their lives. And then we're going to continue a little bit with discussion about what to do when you have constructive reasons to share gossip, or in that case, it's not gossip, when you have to give constructive reasons to share information, how you go about doing that. And then at the end, everyone's asking me, what do I do when I go to work and la, 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 or family gatherings? And the answer to that is, I don't know, but we'll try. It's not easy. And then a few take-home things. Now, I've told you a few stories about the great rabbi, the Chafetz Chaim, who's the rabbi who wrote the book about gossip, took all the teachings from the Talmud and codified them. So I want to tell you a story about a different rabbi, because this rabbi is going to share an amazing insight later on. So I want to tell you a story about this rabbi. The rabbi's name was Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He lived in Jerusalem, passed away, I think, around 30 years ago. He was this world-famous rabbi. People asked him questions about every area of Jewish law, from medical ethics to laws of Shabbat to technology and science and how it impacts things like Shabbat and other things. And he was just a rabbi that, the rabbi's rabbi. At the same time, his humility was also absolutely amazing. He lived in a little tiny apartment. Like this room that I'm sitting in is probably larger than his apartment. And if they would have sent out an email around the world, anyone is in the position to build a mansion for Rabbi Auerbach, in 10 minutes they would have started building. He wouldn't have walked into the building. He was unassuming and an amazingly humble person. In fact, when he died, he left in his last will and testament that at his funeral there should be no eulogies, because people usually start talking about the praising the person, and often they exaggerate. He said, no eulogies. On my tombstone, it should say no titles, just Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who taught Torah. That's what he wants written on his tombstone. The Talmud says that people who try to run away from honor, the honor pursues them and catches up to them. At his funeral, there were 400,000 people because of his greatness. I remember reading a story then that there was a policeman on duty there at the funeral. And he said, if I can get a crowd like this at my funeral, I'd have a heart attack right now. He didn't realize that in order to get a crowd like that, you have to live a certain way. Anyways, so he, this person was the rabbi's rabbi, had total mastery of the entire Torah, at the same time as amazing humility. And we've discussed that one of the ways to deal with the challenge of gossip is to go out of our way to use the gift of speech for the positive. That we see the power of what a good word could accomplish. So the story is that this rabbi was, you know, and this he spent every waking day hour of his day studying Torah, teaching Torah, praying, or talking to people about their problems. His home was always open. So evidently someone shared with him that in New York there was a tragedy, and a young mom passed away with a bunch of children in the house. And of course, it's a tragedy. There must be maybe something specifically tragic about that situation. But it moved him very much. So he told somebody, please get their phone number. And I want to call, and I want to speak to each one of the children. This rabbi was so busy, he didn't have a free minute for himself. He gets the phone number, he calls. Now, this rabbi I just described his humility to you. What does he do? He has to speak to each of the children. And he says to them, I am Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, calling from Jerusalem. I am the biggest rabbi of the generation. And I heard about your mom, and I heard that she was a wonderful mom, and I want to talk to you and share my condolences. He must have been so uncomfortable saying that, because he was so humble. But he knew that he was a great rabbi. When people asked him questions, he didn't say, why are they asking me? I don't know anything. He knew that he was. He forced himself to describe himself in that way, because he knew that the next, when the boys and girls go back to school after Shiva, they're going to tell their friends, you won't believe who called me. Rabbi Auerbach called me from Jerusalem. So he went out of his way, he took the time, went out of his way, and described himself in a way that made himself so uncomfortable, because he knew that by doing that with those words, he's going to lift these kids up. So keep that in mind later on when he tells us something that we should give a lot of weight to his ethical judgment and sense. Now, the last few weeks we've been discussing the letter that I sent you. We're not going to the letters. We finished the letter, but the letter deals with how do you do when someone asks you information. Let's say considering hiring somebody, you're dating somebody, you're marrying somebody, and you have information that could save the person from being hurt or damaged. Right, so that's called constructive. And then typically gossip is called destructive, negative. If you do it for constructive purpose, then it's constructive and it's not evil. Then it's something that you may do and you should do. As we discussed, left to ourselves, we'd say, okay, it's necessary to share this information, send the email and click send, finished. Our tradition tells us that no, there are conditions that must be met before we can do that. Right. Remember, we discussed the fact that you can never share hearsay. It can't be subjective. You can't say that it has a bizarre sense of humor. It's a subjective thing. You can't embellish. And you can only share it if there's no way to protect the person unless you share the information. If you find some other way to do it, then you have to do that. Okay. So now suppose a person asked our impression about a person that considering hiring, and you know something that you have to share with the person. And you fulfilled all these conditions, ready to click send. So left to ourselves, that we would say, I think, yes. You know, one of the reasons we need our tradition to give us absolutes, because left to ourselves, we'd be pretty quick to click send. Right? So everything is in the letter is true. We haven't embellished, it's true. And it's not subjective. Ready to click send. I think most people would say yes. So what we mentioned till now is pretty intuitive. These are intuitive conditions. The next two are not so intuitive. The Talmud says before you click send, there's something else you got to ask yourself. What's that? Are you going to enjoy it? Picture saying to yourself, my whole life I'm waiting to get this guy. Now I have a chance. It's actually a mitzvah now. I'm commanded to share the information and you're going to enjoy sharing that information. Can't do it. If you're going to get pleasure from it, you can't do it. It's no longer constructive, it's destructive if you're going to get pleasure sharing the negative information about the person. Right? Left to ourselves, I don't think we'd ever think of this. Now it gets complicated, which we have to leave for a different time, because it's not so simple. Okay, you know this person is considering hiring this person. You know it would be a disaster. You know, you have information, you know it would be a disaster. But it happens to be that your relation with that person is you would get pleasure from you sharing that information. Now you have conflicting obligations here. Because on one hand, you have an obligation to save the other person from being hurt, but you also have the obligation not to share information if you're going to get pleasure from it. You know what the short answer is? The Chofetz Chaim codifies from the Talmud, well, you got to grow up, and you got to sit down and work on yourself. You don't wing it. You have to say, suppose you have an appointment with the CFO of your company. Your whole future could be in that person's hands. And, you know, there's a little bit of a personality clash. And sometimes you lose yourself and you say things that you might regret or might get you into trouble. You don't go into the CFO's office and wing the conversation. You're going to prepare every word that you're going to say, right? Here the Talmud says that you need to sit down and say to yourself, I've got to overcome the part of me that's going to get pleasure from this. I have to work on myself to give over the information without getting pleasure from it. And you have to work on that until you can say, the Chofetz Chaim says, until in your heart of hearts you can say, yes, I can do this. That's your obligation. If you can't do that, then you can't share it. The next best thing is to find someone else that can maybe share the information. Okay. So we have all the conditions and you will not get any pleasure from sharing the information. Ready to click send. I think we'd all say at this point, yes. Those of you who read the letter, if you didn't read the letter, it's okay. But you know, everything that I wrote, put into the letter was sort of put in there to click in our minds and maybe, oh, shouldn't have said that, shouldn't have done that. You know, the first paragraph I write that, sorry for the delay, just got back from a convention. This was the first letter that I dictated to my secretary when I got back into the office. So I don't know if everyone picked on, why did I put that paragraph in? And If anyone has an idea why this, what I might have had in mind, or how there's something not so simple here about the secretary, if you have an idea, unmute yourself.
You're elevating yourself. You've been away. You're so important that you're going to a convention. You're busy. You have a secretary. You're dictating this to your secretary to send for you because you don't have time to do it yourself.
Okay, good point. It could be that it shows maybe not the greatest humility, but in terms of what the laws of lashon hara of gossip.
Anyone? Rabbi,
yes.
It's Carol. The thought that came to my mind was by dictating the letter to his secretary, he has now shared his opinions or his understandings of this person with someone who wasn't really in a need to know capacity.
Carol, wow. You're right, and actually, I don't think I've ever experienced somebody anticipating that right away. Rabbi Auerbach points this out. Rabbi Auerbach, by the way, by Western standards, he would be, you know, like, come on, get a life. I don't think he was ever on an airplane in his life. He never hardly ever left his little two-bedroom apartment in Jerusalem. He never probably visited a large or corporation or office, right? But he was very, very astute, and that's what he said. One second. You have to share this information. Why does the secretary have to know? That's what we call a Jewish ethicist. And that came from a life of working on himself. That was an instinctive response. What do you mean dictating it to the secretary? Sit down and type it yourself. He did say that, you know, something's in a doctor or hospital setting, you can't have the doctor spending all day typing a thing. But if at all possible, he said, there's no justification for sharing the information with the secretary. Carol, good job.
Thank you, Barakti.
Now, there's one other thing I wanted to mention. You know, I mentioned in the first class that when the Chafetz Chaim wrote this book, someone complained to him, like, you know, you wrote this book, we can't talk anymore. everything's gossip. I can't talk anymore. So his answer was, and he had a very strong sense of humor as well. He said, on the contrary, without my book, you couldn't talk because you wouldn't know what you could say. Now I've told you what you could say, so now you could talk. So actually, he actually comes through with something that we would also probably not anticipate. We've discussed that sometimes it's constructive to share information. Right, and the case that we discuss usually a person is about to enter a relationship, a business, a relationship, and they could be hurt. So it's constructive to save that person from being hurt. Right, the Chafetz Chaim, based on the Talmud, tells us that there's another form of constructive sharing of information. If this wouldn't be a half-hour Zoom class, I would maybe would go around and any ideas. It's not obvious, I don't think. Carol probably knows, but she wants to be humble. She's not going to jump on this one as well. The you know what it is? Sometimes you're going through a difficult time. Let's say someone at work in the office is driving you crazy. It could be a boss, a coworker, sometimes a family member. You're going crazy from this, and you need somehow to unburden your heart, right? So you can unburden your heart by sharing it with a spouse, with a parent, or with a very, very close friend. That, the Talmud said, is permitted. It's considered a legitimate human need and a constructive purpose to unburden your heart. Right. So if all the other conditions are met, if a person wants to sit down with their spouse and say, I'm going crazy. I just have to share this with you. This is what's going on in the office. Now, there's one caveat. The person who's listening to it, what do they have to do? They have to listen. They have to empathize. But in their heart of hearts, they can't assume that it's true. Now, they have to realize that sometimes even people that we love are subjective, and there might be two sides to this. Doesn't mean you say to the spouse, I want to let you know that Rabbi Katz told me that I can't believe you and I don't believe you. you don't do that. You listen and you show concern, right? But you have to be careful not to assume that you're getting the only side to this to this story, but it is a legitimate need, a human need, psychological need to unburden your heart, and that's considered constructive. Okay, now a few people have asked me, what do you do when you're at work and people are gossiping, or family, whatever it is, you know, what do you do? You know, someone mentioned, who mentioned the Kotel before? Someone mentioned that, who's that? I think someone mentioned
that. Kotel.
Who's that?
Marlene's background is the Kotel.
Ah, okay. So you know, I always think to myself, picture you're at the Kotel. I imagine that most of you have been at the Kotel. You're at the Kotel. It's an amazing experience, spiritual experience, 3,000 years of history. It's an amazing experience. And all of a sudden you see an old friend that you haven't seen in a long time. And you say to yourself, boy, do I have a juicy piece of gossip. I haven't seen my friend in a long time. It's a juicy piece of gossip. No? There's a good chance, right, that you might say to yourself, I mean, gossip is never a good thing, but at the Kotel? Not at the Kotel. Right. At the Kotel, you know that just like there's different dress codes at the Kotel. Being at the Kotel is different, right? And at the Kotel, you might say, at the Kotel, I'm not going to share that gossip. You find the strength not to share it, right? So we need to always realize that in Jewish tradition, the Kotel is not the only place. Mishkan Avenue can also be a holy place. When we're given a challenge, and we live up to the challenge, Mishkan Avenue is a holy place. Shabbat is holy. You know, a good place to start, it's almost like dieting. Like say, if someone says, I heard Rabbi Katz's workshop, that's it. I will never say a word of gossip the rest of my life. That you're probably not going to progress. You need to take small steps. And another way to do it would be that Shabbat, just like the Kotel was different, Shabbat is different. And the Shabbat dinner, which sometimes makes it even more challenging because you're sitting around and you're schmoozing. I'm going to be careful because it's Shabbat. But the Jewish message always is that wherever we are, it's sacred territory, just like the Kotel. Now, what do you do? It's very challenging because, people are not, Mark Twain once said that very few sinners ever repented after the first 8 minutes of the sermon. People don't like to be sermonized, so it's very, very, very challenging, and also very often in life it's like that, Jewishly and generally as well. You can't put everything into a computer and get a printout of what to say. There's so many variables in terms of who the people are, if it's friends, if it's family, if it's coworkers, if it's boss, who you are, what your relationship, what your personality is, what their personality is like, right? So I'm just going to throw out a few things that sometimes in the right situation for the right person can work. What you're not allowed to do, we are never allowed, because other people are doing it, to join in.
You put the bag back.
Sorry?
The garbage.
Someone saying something?
I think it's just background noise.
Oh, okay. I thought somebody said... So you're never allowed to jump in and participate. You're also not allowed to signal, acceptance. You're never allowed. We're never allowed to do that. What we can do, ideally, if we can shift the conversation, that's the best thing. Sometimes again, depending on who you're with and all the conditions, sometimes we could say, yeah, how about talking about something positive, and bring up something positive, or. Even better sometimes is to say something positive about the person. This person, I'll tell you, great thing that the person once did for me. Something positive. Sometimes, and some people have told me that they've done this. Sometimes, again, depending on who it is, sometimes you could say, I need your help here. I recently took a workshop with the Surround Our Cats. The workshop was all about trying to be positive in how we look and see other people and how we talk with other people. I need your help. I'm trying to work hard to be positive. You might say, well, who's this crazy rabbi? Sounds interesting, but sometimes people have told me that sometimes that can work. Now, you also have to always know that sometimes if you express disapproval or even indirect disapproval, what might happen? achieve the exact opposite of what you want to achieve, right? If you say, how about cutting out the gossip here? More often than not, the persons get defensive and say, "Ooh, look who became a rabbi here all of a sudden," you know, and find a need to defend what they said, right? So in that case, you're not allowed to say any of these things if it's going to backfire and cause the exact opposite. So, you know, we'll sometimes you make you get a phone call, you run out of the room. If all fails, we're told to drift off mentally. Sometimes, you know, you can just space out. Figure you're listening to a rabbi talk, right? You space out, right? So sometimes we have to be able to space out. You know, you can't control what's being said here. But you space out and think about something else, and think about your spouse, your children, your grandchildren, your best friends, Grand Canyon, whatever it is. Drift away mentally. At the very least, if we can't get out of being there and listen and hearing it, we're obligated not to believe it and not to enjoy it. That's an absolute obligation, right? So, you know, just like I said, like with the CEO, sometimes CFO, you have to be creative. Sometimes, you know, if we take it seriously, we have to think, you know, judging by who these people are, is there anything I can do to put a spin on the conversation, you know, to direct it in a different direction? If we can, we should. If we can't, then we can't. And we just make a point of not believing it and not enjoying it. I want to tell you a few things for take home. You know, first of all, I want to share with you, as I said, you know, somebody sent me an email. They sent me an email that they know some people who have been gone to classes about gossip, Jewish classes about gossip for 20 years, and they still keep talking gossip. You know, so of course I didn't say that because they didn't come to my workshop. I wouldn't say that, but the reality is that it's difficult. It's a challenge, and it's part of us. You know, we discuss different tools that we can try to use to sensitize ourselves, but it's a challenge. But I want to tell you, there was a letter that became famous from a great rabbi, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner. He was the dean of the yeshiva in which I and Rabbi Deutsch studied, and they published letters that he wrote to students. And one of the students evidently wrote him that he had some failures in his attempts to become more spiritually sensitive and to be more connected to Torah and more connected to God. He backslided. He was very down on himself. So the rabbi wrote a letter. It's become a classic letter, and it's very relevant to this. He wrote that, you know, we make a mistake when we... I've told you stories about these great rabbis. We make a mistake. We look at the product. This great rabbi became this great, the Chofetz Chaim became this person who, as we mentioned, would rather not get a hearing aid because he doesn't want to hear gossip, you know. So we look at the finished product, we don't realize how many challenges they had and how many backslidings they had and failures they had until they reached the point of becoming such a great person. He explicitly says, who knows how many times the Chofetz Chaim himself had challenges with gossip till he became a person that it was so repulsive that he couldn't possibly speak or listen to gossip, right? So if you think that you took this three-part workshop and now it's a piece of cake, it's not going to be a piece of cake, and there's challenges and we're going to fail sometimes. We need to know that, and we need to keep these words in mind that great people that we know as great weren't born great. They became great gradually, and that's one of the things that we have to do. I want to share a story with you about this rabbi in Jerusalem, Rabbi Jacob Edelstein. Another great rabbi. Whenever I say great rabbi, by the way, great rabbi means scholar, meaning total command of the entire Talmud, etc., etc. It also means a heart and character traits that are just as great. In Jewish tradition, you don't become a great rabbi just because you're a scholar. So this great rabbi was very, very sick, and he, among other things, he lost the ability to speak. And at one point, he made some progress, and the doctors informed him that they're hopeful that with a lot of therapy, he might be able to regain some of his power of speech. So the speech therapist came in for the first time and said, Rabbi, here's what we're going to do. Write on a piece of paper two words that you wish you could say, and we're going to work on relearning to say those two words. Right. Maybe this year is different. The typical time, some people would say "go beers." Unfortunately, you know, that's we're not talking about those kind of people. And this story illustrates the opposite. So again, it's interesting to think to ourselves, what two words would I want to say? So this rabbi, without even thinking, his response was, I want to learn how to say toda. What does toda mean?
Thank you.
Because throughout his illness, there were people who helped him. There was doctors, nurses, visitors, students, strangers who came to visit him, and he was never able to say thank you, and that's painful to him. He would like to learn how to say toda. Thank you. And he would like to learn how to say amen. Why amen? Because he's not able to pray. He can't say the words, right? So when he would eat something, someone would say the prayer. And when someone says the prayer, we say amen. So he misses the ability to say amen. So he took one word that he is going to use to connect to people, and one word he's going to use to connect to God. Right. I think this is I hope this is a take home, you know, just to think sometimes of the gift of speech is so precious, right? And we know that if we're serious about the question about life, we know that he had it right, not the person who might say go beers. We know they had it right, and that should be a reminder to us of the preciousness of the ability to speak. You know, and also you know that people very often talk about the fact that if those of us that are parents, sometimes our children don't listen to us. I'm sure nobody here has that experience, but there is such a thing, you know, out there. There are people who have challenges sometimes that their kids don't listen to them, right? And if we don't have, whether we have children or not, sometimes there are always people in our lives that we would like to influence that they don't necessarily listen. And somebody once said something very powerful. They said, enough talking about the fact that our kids don't listen to us. We need to remember and remind ourselves that they're watching us. Mm. As important as it is, we'd like them to listen to us. We have to always remember they're watching us, right? And you know, of course, we all know good parents, decent people. They teach your kids to say please, thank you, hold the door. Those are all basic things, and of course, they're important. But this particular area of using the gift of speech and not speaking gossip and not speaking negatively is such a precious opportunity, right? Again, like Mark Twain said, if you don't listen to a sermon after 8 minutes, you don't listen to a sermon from your parents. No kid ever, I don't think, responded to a sermon from their parents. An example, they respond to. You know, the same Rabbi Abach once told somebody, you know, somebody conversation, again, no one here would do it, but sometimes the people will at home will get a phone call, right? And let's say the wife may say to the husband or vice versa, so-and-so is on the phone. And sometimes the tendency that someone might say, tell them I'm not home. Rabbi Abach said, do you know what you just did to your kids? It sounds like a relatively innocent thing, but you just should talk to your kids by example. Right, and they're watching you, that it's okay. So when it closes, one thing, you know, it's difficult, it's a challenge, you know. I want to tell you two things. One is a teaching of the Talmud. The Talmud says that each moment that a person refrains from speaking gossip, especially when you have a juicy piece to share, each moment that we find the strength to refrain, we merit seeing a spiritual light in the eternal life that no angel can fathom. Now, in Jewish tradition, we're not so big about the angels. Okay, the spiritual beings called angels, but the action is human beings. That's where the action is, and we have the ability, the Talmud says, by rising to the occasion and not sharing a piece of gossip, we merit a spiritual experience, a spiritual clarity that angels can't even fathom. And once I once heard about a wonderful family that they were a typical American family. They weren't what we call very religiously observant, and they had three children, and all three children came connected to CTN, and eventually all three of them became much more connected and became religiously observant. Talk about a reason for a need for a support group. Three kids in one family. The And what attracted the three kids to the CTN was they appreciated the ethical teachings of Judaism. So it turns out that their mother passed away shortly before I met any of them. So as I got to know them better, you know, they mentioned their mom once in a while. So I said, tell me about your mother. Tell me something about your mother. Because you know, three young kids that come to hear a workshop about gossip, you know, and increase that connection because of the appreciation for the ethical teachings of Judaism. There must have been something. The mother was probably someone you could buy a used car from, kind of imagine, right? So I said, tell me something about your mother. And yes, each one separately, each one said the same thing. My mother never, ever said a word of Lashon Hara. She wasn't what you would call religious, but that's, as we discussed last 3 weeks, that is an important part of our religion. But each one said that they never saw their mother speak a piece of gossip, right? So we have to realize that as I said, as much as we want our kids to listen to us, we need to remember they're watching us. But it's a precious opportunity, you know. Obviously, everything has to be age appropriate. But hopefully, that in the course of these workshops, things that resonated with you, you have a chance to share it with your kids, you know. And in today's world, you got to start young. You know, to sensitize them to the gift of speech and what a good word can do and what a bad word can do.